just not enough.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Noll Show. And now, your host, Gary Noll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Noll, broadcasting video streaming live from our studios in New York City. Today, we're going to be talking about issues that empower us. We're going to look at the role of fruits and vegetables in lengthening the telomeres. Those are the protein caps on the ends of our chromosomes that when we do the right thing, we live a longer life. When we don't, we live a shorter life. So a lot of you have been doing a lot of right, and I'll tell you what that means in the way of adding up your life. Also, ashwagandha, very important herb, reduces chronic stress. And also why it's that time of the year when a lot of people are grilling, especially when holidays come around. You see a lot of commercials, and on the food different channels, they tell you the joys of grilling, all of that, generally pork. Well, it's not good for you. It actually kills you. I'll explain why. And this is a new study on, can grilled meat increase your diabetes risk? The answer is yes. Also, the cost of increased life expectancy is a medicalized society. We're living sicker, longer, not healthier, longer. That's a big issue. I'm going to take some time on our public health segment to deal with that. And also how mindfulness at school reduces the likelihood of depression and anxiety. And this is from a major university in Germany. And a lot more on health and healing. And again, just so you understand, every day I try to bring you studies you would not know about from leading institutions published in respected journals, so that if someone's saying, well, should we take what Gary's saying with a grain of salt, or is there anything backing it, you can have the confidence that what I'm sharing with you has a lot of science behind it. In fact, prior to today's live broadcast, I did a pre-record. And in the pre-record, a physician was talking about what a tiny percentage of his patients actually will accept a healthy diet. They don't want to give up their comfort foods. They don't want to exercise. And he says that probably only 5% of his patients make any effort to really be healthy. They want a drug. That's what they expect. Well, those drugs do not cure you. Those drugs do not reverse the underlying cause of disease. They merely manage symptoms. So we are a society that needs to learn that lesson. Now, I'm going to spend extra time today about our environment. I'm going to talk about ghost forest. You may not have heard about a ghost forest, but with rising sea levels from the Florida Keys clear up to New Jersey, millions upon millions of trees are dying because of the encroachment of seawater from the nightly tides and storms bring it in, and that's killing the woodlands. Not a word about it. And this is an important look, and this is from Yale Climate Science from Yale University. Also, I'll be looking at many other climate issues. Greenland, how rapid climate change on the world's largest island is affecting all of us. The ice sheets are melting, and then how the severity of North Pacific storms at highest point in over 1,200 years. So these storms, this is from Dartmouth College, and then how the what's the consequences of releasing 700,000 tons of radioactive water into the Pacific? So we'll deal with that. And fracking giant sues a resident for $5 million for speaking to the media about their contaminated water. You mean a person's water is contaminated by hydrofracking, so when they tell the press, they get sued? That's not right. So we'll deal with that. Also today, I want to share something that I feel is important. If someone wins an award and it's just, They deserve it. Good. Good for them. What happens if you win a Right Livelihood Award, which is the another word similar to the Nobel Prize, but you didn't earn it? What happens if you win a documentary award at the Academy Awards, but you didn't tell the truth? What happens when major media, including some popular programs on Pacifica, promote this group when they had the resources to do their homework before they promote something? Well, there's one lone voice out there, and this is just one of those remarkable journalists. Her name, and I'm sure some of you have heard her on this program, she's been on here several times, Vanessa Beely, B-E-E-L-E-Y. She spent 18 months in the war zone, in the battlefields, in the destroyed cities. And she wanted to know, who are these white helmets? Now, I've given you some excerpts. I've given you some audio clips. Now I want to read what she wrote to the Nobel Peace Prize nomination about this group and how we should rethink it and who's behind it. And if they could pull this scam on us, then think of what else they have been doing to condition us to believe something that isn't true also. Also today, we're going to begin our series on questioning the safety and efficacy of vaccines. Ask your average physician, how many hours have you done doing research on safety or efficacy or both? More often than not, it's none, zero. The only thing they know is the informational packages that come from the vaccine manufacturers, the drug detail people, and information released by the CDC. All of that is propaganda. But what happens when you go to the actual independent scientific literature, even the government's own database, PubMed, or through the Library of Medicine, or through the National Academy of Science, and suddenly you start realizing, wow, I didn't know all this. If I knew all this, I'd have a different opinion. So there is a physician who was pro-vaccine. She started off pro-vaccine. She believed absolutely in the efficacy of vaccine, safety of vaccine, but she wanted to check the efficacy. 15,000 hours of research later, she is now in that rarefied position of about 9 other scientists and physicians who've done about the same amount of homework, more or less, and they all have the same position. There is no such thing as a safe or effective vaccine, period. Well, how can anyone stand up to an enormous institution like the National Institutes of Health that controls all government dollars and all science on the subject of anything medical, public health? There, under them are the National Cancer Institute, National Institutes of Mental Health, the FDA, the CDC, National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease. Everyone's under them. But they're wrong. And it's time that we, the people, challenge them. So today, we're going to be speaking truth to power in that segment. And depending upon how much time we have to that, what else I'll be sharing with you. Always have a lot. Let's begin. Some really exciting information. I always like to share something that's new and exciting. And this particular piece is from the European Journal of Clinical Nutrition. And it says here, a decrease in telomere length, which has been linked with age-related diseases, including heart disease, has been found to, in recent studies, to be associated with reduced intake of vegetables in women and fruit in men. Men also experienced a decrease in the average telomere length in association with greater intake of fat, particularly butter. The study was reported in the European Journal of Clinical Nutrition. Researchers measured white blood cell telomere length in 1,942 men and women, and here's what they found. So in lay language, here's what it means. First, understand what we're talking about. What really more than anything else in life determines how long you're going to live is some little tiny aspect of your chromosome called the telomere. and telomeres are impacted by what is called telomerase. Now, when you exercise on a daily basis, you lengthen the telomere. That's good. You want to get it lengthened. When you're sedentary, you shorten it. That's bad. You don't want it short. The shorter your telomeres, the quicker you die. When you eat meat in any form, but especially meat that's been processed, like your meat on a pizza, pastrami, salami, bologna, all these processed meats, or charcoal meats, or heavily cooked meats, create a chemical that shortens your telomeres. Hence, meat is bad in any form. It wouldn't matter whether it's chicken or fish or beef. Doesn't matter. It's shortening your life. Then you have sugar shortens it. Alcohol really shortens it, measurably shortens it. And it's rather a phenomenon because all college students throughout history are susceptible to social pressures to adapt to whatever the trend of the moment is. And there was a time when people go to college and it was expected you drink and in some cases get drunk. But never have we seen college students binge drinking, especially women, as we do today. Now, here's the problem. Not that this is not a rite of passage and you can accept or reject it, engage or not engage it. But the reality is that every time you binge drink, you're killing not one but millions of brain cells, liver cells, kidney cells, and heart cells. And that's permanent, with the exception of the liver. Some of that, about 40%, can grow back. The rest can't. Now you think, well, so what? Don't I have hundreds of billions of cells, even trillions? The answer is yes, you do. Your body contains, depending upon your size, anywhere from 50 to 100 trillion cells. There was an actor, a very famous actor. He was known for his swashbuckling roles. His name was Errol Flynn. I met Errol Flynn's wife, one of those happenstance meetings down in Jamaica, where she had a beautiful big estate. And she was very charming. And she had these wonderful stories to tell about her life with Errol Flynn. And I had some questions. I knew three people who knew him. One was Hedy Lamarr. I met Hedy through... I was just thinking about this morning, walking to work. There was a... do any of you remember back on WMCA in the mid-1970s when I did a daily show in 4 hours on Saturday? And I got so much mail that anywhere between 20 to 40 volunteers would show up every Saturday. I'd bring in a whole vegan lunch for them so they could, have as much food and juice as they wanted. And we took over the whole conference room upstairs and the whole downstairs, and we answered anywhere between 5 to 7,000 letters every week. And one day, I'm sitting there, and they'd categorize the questions. And so if there were 300 questions on arthritis, I would give one answer that would cover them all, and they'd be right. And all this was handwritten out. There was no computers then. And a woman came over, and she said, is this the Greta Garbo? It says G. Garbo, and here's her name. And she wants a meeting with you. And I looked at her, and I said, yeah, that's her. So it was through her that, who was a very extremely intellectual person, great conversations. But there was a whole group of retired entertainers, people from Broadway and ballet and opera and motion pictures and television. And what do you do when you retire? You still have a life. You still may be, middle-aged. You could, depending upon your means, your wealth or lack of it, your social position or lack of it, your interest in social and political issues or lack, what you spend your life with. Was one of those people who came along who was interested in health issues was Hedy Lamarr. And Hedy Lamarr is one of the people that really deserved the moniker of genius. In fact, if you look up the work she did in computers and and research that was later, that science was later used by the U.S. government, she'd be a billionaire today if she were alive. And she wasn't in the money. And she didn't bear fools well. She liked very deep and honest discussions about life. Now, there was a whole group like that. They were extremely charming. They were interesting. They had great experiences. And they tried to look for the best in all people. I never once heard them complaining or gossiping or bad-mouthing people. It was always, okay, we got a problem, what's the solution? And in the case of Errol Flynn, each of the three people who I knew who were close to him all said that his problem was he wouldn't stop drinking. And yet they never saw him drunk. He was one of those people that could hold their liquor anywhere from a quart of hard alcohol, 80 proof, per day, sometimes two. Now, here's the problem. When you're one of those people that drink like that, you have literally taken your life expectancy, let's say it's 120 years, and you've cut it by at least 60 to 70%. And indeed, I think it was 50 or 51 when he died. And his body was just, his liver was destroyed. Everything was gone by the time he died. So you have to say, what did he die from? The alcohol, or his telomeres were so short from the alcohol. Now, you look at a lot of these young people today who think it's really cool to do the binge drinking or to drink every time they go out. Not necessarily today to get drunk, but just to always drink. They're no longer 25, 30, 35. They're closer to 70, 75, or 80 when it comes to the health of their internal organs, and their telomeres are very short. Now, add on that, do they have stress? Do they have the rest of their diet is unhealthy? Are they on sugar and junk foods? Then they're going to die young. They'll be dying in their 40s or 50s. How do you think we get an average lifespan, let's say, right now around 78 years of age? You take people living to 90 and 100 and people living in their 40s and 50s, and you take the total number and you divide it, and that's your average. But now ask yourself, how many people you know have reached their 70s and are sick? How many people are still healthy in their 80s? How many people already have memory loss in their 40s or overweight in their 30s? So all these factors contribute to how long you're going to live. The telomeres are right at the top of that list. So here's what it's saying. It's saying if you're eating saturated fat, they're using butter, but any meat will do. You're going to have shorter telomeres. You're going to die sooner. If you are also eating too many calories at one time, you're going to shorten your telomeres. You're going to die sooner. However, the opposite is also true. Here's the good news. The more fruits and vegetables and fruit and vegetable juices you're drinking, the longer the telomeres, the less calories you consume, the longer the telomeres, the longer the lifespan. Now, if you have a big salad and you load that salad with healthy fruits and vegetables and herbs and sprouts, nuts, you can put anything in there that's healthy, that's a low-calorie salad. Hence caloric restriction, but lots of fruits and vegetables. That salad is I'm going to live longer today because I ate this salad day. So just think about the next time you go to have something. Is it concentrated calories or is it light on calories? That's what they're saying. Also, they're saying that this is a study that says reduced coenzyme Q10 levels associated with poor neurological outcomes and a greater chance of dying following a heart attack. Okay, this is a major study. Here's what it means. If you took 100 to 300 milligrams a day of ubiquinol, the best coenzyme Q10, you're going to have a greater chance of A, not having a heart attack or stroke, or B, if you have one, of recovering than if you didn't take it. So that's a big deal. And also your brain's going to be protected and a healthier brain. And men, if you want to prevent prostate cancer, according to this study from the Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism done at the Medical University of South Carolina, you got to have about 4,000 units of vitamin D3 a day, because the men who took 4,000 units of vitamin D3 a day for 1 year substantially reduced their risk by 55%. That's huge, huge. 55% reduction in prostate cancer? Oh, you bet. That's good news. Also, the omega-3 fatty acids improve working memory in young adults. This is in PLOS One and done at the University of Pittsburgh. And Department of Radiology tested the benefits of the omega-3 fatty acids. And they were using about 1,600 milligrams. I would suggest 2,000 milligrams. So if you want to have better memory, healthier brain, the omega-3 fatty acids can do it. Also, with ashwagandha, I mentioned this at the beginning, ashwagandha is what is called an adaptogenic herbs. The number one adaptogenic herb would be ginseng, but so too would be ginkgo biloba. So too would be hawthorn. So too would be cayenne. And ashwagandha, ashwagandha, it's known to reduce stress big time. And stress is a major killer, because if you're under chronic stress, you're more susceptible to stress-induced cardiomyopathy or spontaneous weakening of your heart that predisposes you to arrhythmias and even sudden cardiac death. So ashwagandha reduces stress about 600 milligrams a day. There was a randomized placebo-controlled double-blind study. It reduces cortisol by 27%. That's big time. And also by taking in grilled meats, this is the latest study on this, quote, can grilled meat increase diabetes? Yes, due to a compound that this cooking style creates. Quote, experts have found that certain cooking methods that were thought to be healthy for a long time can actually be unhealthy. Barbecuing, regarded as a healthier alternative to fried food, fits into that what researchers at Mount Sinai University in New York discovered was that a certain compound found when food is cooked in dry heat could activate significant weight gain, insulin resistant, as well as type 2 diabetes conditions. And while grilling and roasting food, the process creates a compound called MG, which is a methylglycosol, and type of advanced glycation end product they discovered. So something new. This is not heterocyclic amines. This is something else. So when you have any kind of that cooked meat, you are aging your body prematurely. That's the latest on health and healing. Before we take a break, I just want to share a few more points with you. And this is our public health segment. This is from Marco Torres from PreventDisease.com. The cost of increased life expectancy, meaning when we live longer, is in a medicalized society. We're living sicker longer. I'll just quote one paragraph here. It says, geriatric medicine will have us believe that more people are living healthier into old age with fewer disabilities than ever before. And like most claims from modern medicine, this one is also false. Life expectancy at birth rose by 4.7 years for men and 3.5 years for women in the last 20 years. And that has come to an enormous cost in the quality of our lives. For they are suffering, our seniors are suffering with more pain, greater disability than ever before in the last 15 years of life. People globally are living longer, but chronic debilitating conditions are becoming more prevalent, according to a massive new study. And then it goes on to talk about the cost of all this. Well, here are my thoughts. We have only looked at people aging and the diseases they're manifesting through a medical economic model, which says something to this effect. Treating cancer at a certain point in advanced cancer is of no value to the patient. You're just extending their suffering. So better stop the medications and let them have opiates and die without pain, but at least they won't be spending either society or their own money for something that's not going to benefit them. That's the argument. and you have people for and against that. You also have people who are living, but they're living on medications. I just counseled a person that was on 22 different medications. Half of those medications were to counteract the adverse effects of other medications. When I asked this person, have any of the physicians you've seen who've given you these medications asked you about changing your lifestyle? The answer was no. And I said, would you be willing to change your lifestyle? And the person said, yes, because I'm in such misery. And what we're not seeing today is we're not seeing how much suffering and pain and fatigue and loss of muscle mass and the withering away and lack of quality of life and then the isolation, the sense that we're no longer vital. Loneliness. Loneliness is a big issue in our society, and we're not addressing it because we're so separate. We have so much of this identity politics used on a social level that young people don't associate with older people. And then many older people won't associate with other older people depending upon their belief systems, as if a single belief or a single challenge to your belief system means you'll exclude people. And then society doesn't look after these people. But boy, medicine does for one reason, not to reverse their suffering, but because they are a profit stream. Just look at who the ads are geared towards on television. If you're over the age of 40, it's because you're incontinent or you got a bladder infection or you got to go, or you got pains in your bones or because you can't sleep or you got allergies or because you got some form of skin condition. And in which case, then you should take their medications. And even though the side effects of the medication for an allergy medication may be death, at least you won't have to worry about sneezing at the wrong time. You're nothing more than a profit stream to Big Pharma. It's that simple. I'm not being cynical, nor am I just being pragmatic. I'm being honest and realistic. I wished it were otherwise. But what's the solution? The solution is simple. Begin a protocol that changes the way your body ages. And if you're older, I just met a man and woman on the street yesterday. I was walking down the street and I hear Gary, and I turned around and this gentleman, and I recognized him. I'd seen him throughout the years. He said, I'm having some problems and I don't know what to do. And so I said, okay. And he told me the problems, and his wife was there and said, that she actually was so distressed and so overwhelmed by taking care of him at this point that she was just going to put him in a home. And I said, well, there's no reason to do that unless you try everything. Well, but we've tried everything. No, you haven't tried everything. So I gave him a protocol right there and then, and hopefully, and I'll monitor it and I'll keep on it, we can turn what this man has around and he'll regain a sense of life, quality of life. But the trouble is, during this whole period of time, he was not doing enough. You see, we like to think we can mix and match our metaphors. We can take a little bit of health and a little bit of sickness, and we can take a little bit of nice and a little bit of not nice, a little bit of kindness, a little bit of mean-spiritedness, a little bit of spirituality, a little bit of, debasement. And we throw them all together because in the end, one will somehow win the day. It doesn't. Every single negative thing you do, whether it's a thought or an action, sooner or later, it'll be there to meet you. You'll all live. If you live long enough, you'll all meet the karma that we created by intent or non-intent, by ignorance or conditioning, by willful neglect, whatever our motivation, we will be there to meet our karma. The question is, can we learn to make better choices so the karma is a good karma, not a negative karma? And so in the very near future, when I have an opportunity, I will put together a protocol that everyone can follow, and then I'll meet with people. My schedule right now is packed. I can't do it at this moment, but it'll happen in the near future. I remember some years ago I got a call from a White Plains Seventh-day Adventist church member saying they were sick and they wanted to help themselves, but they also wanted to help their congregation members because they were all sick. I said, I will help you. I'll even come up there if you get the pastor on board. So the health support group is for the whole church. Well, they did. And over the next 6 months, every month, I would go there. Luann Panessi would go there. We had exercise people go there. Everyone that we could bring in who could teach them something else, cooking techniques, juicing. At the end of 6 months, this group had made such a radical transformation. The diabetes, the overweight, the arthritis, the high blood pressure, the high cholesterol, all gone. And that I sent this paper out to the National Council that handles the Seventh-day Adventists. And I said, why don't you offer this protocol in all your churches? Well, they never did. And then I suggested if there's any religious group, I don't care what the religion is, if there's any religious group that would like to do this as a congregation, where the person who heads your church, whether it's an imam or a rabbi or a preacher, minister, I'll come and I'll help you if you do it as a church. One group chose to do it. It was a small church in Brooklyn, a Caribbean church, and they made some major progress. I mean, revolutionary to their health, just reversed their diseases. And that was thanks to one of its parishioners who herself was healthy, but saw that the rest of the congregation was not. I remember doing that, it was about 7 years ago in a summer. So here's a couple pledges. One, in the very near future, meaning for me, that's about the next 6 months, I will in New York, I will do live, but also webinar around the world. So anyone in the world who can put together a group will be able to, we'll all change together for the better. And if any religious group wants to have your congregation, and you got to go to the top person, because all this starts with that person saying, yes, the health of the person, the congregants, is important, in which case I'll work with them. And again, I will do this for all religious groups, and I'll do it in person, but also we will video stream it, meaning we'll film it, and anyone who has a computer can just watch it anywhere in the world. This way, we're taking our message to a larger audience. That's the advantage of social media. So I just want to let you know that's all coming. All right? Because, yeah, I can help people one-on-one, and I do every day, 7 days a week. I spend a good part of my evenings counseling people. But boy, do we have a lot more people who need help. And so the next time you hear someone from the medical industrial economic complex suggest that, you know, a person's life isn't worth anything at a certain point, so let them die, well, you might not be able to save that person, but don't say that person can't be saved. I can't tell you how many people are alive today because they made radical changes in their life. So it's doable. And also, you're only valuing a person based upon what it costs to keep them well with medicines. You have not done a cost analysis of what it costs to keep them well using natural diet and lifestyle. It's 99% cheaper to do it naturally. But because you have no experience with it, because that's not where they make their money, that's not where they have their expertise, they refuse to see if there's any other people who have that knowledge. Well, yeah, we do. It's here. So let's get the word out. Let us not allow seniors or people who are sick to feel that there is no hope. There is, and that they can't, their condition can't be changed. It can, and that society should no longer have a value in someone if it costs more to keep them alive than to let them die. That's a very lacking in moral and spiritual equation to use. That's not the right metrics to use. It shows you how far we've come from our humanistic values. I'm Gary Nall. That's the latest on health and healing. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome you from all over the world. I'm Gary Nall. I'm hopeful that finally some people who've been living in absolute abject denialism of the impact of global warming or environmental degradation or human responsibility for it or the power of its impact are finally beginning to awaken. I've been a resident of Texas since back in the 1980s, and I can tell you that no matter how many times I've suggested, you better find the right place to live because you can't fight nature. It falls on deaf ears. I found the same thing with people in a lecture I was giving out Long Island just before Hurricane Sandy. There's a sense of invulnerability. If something hasn't happened, it won't happen. It's like talking with an overweight person who's stressed and smoking cigarettes, how susceptible they are to their next breath could be the breath before a heart attack or stroke. They still feel, not me, not today, it's not my time. The same way when Katrina, my radio program was broadcast in New Orleans at that time, very popular down there, and I pleaded with my audience, walk, if you have to, 50 miles north, northeast, and you'll be out of harm's way. People didn't. I wrote an article called Watching Katrina. People sat mesmerized for 5 days at a Category 5 storm. It hit them at Category 3. But then suddenly we were watching those people who had watched the storm up on the roof yelling, help. I've gone back many, many times. I just finished filming down there. No lesson has been learned. When I say no lesson, none. I wished it were otherwise. Let me just give you the reality. As of today, in some areas, 50 inches of rain have inundated places around Houston. The storm has stalled at about 2 miles an hour. It is partly in the ocean or the Gulf of Mexico, which means it's being reinforced with more water, but there's a high-pressure area in the Rockies that's preventing it from moving. As a result, it's just staying there. It's already dumped 9 trillion gallons of water. It's expected to dump another 9 to 10 trillion gallons of water. And in some places, they're going to get another 20 to 30 inches of water. Or let's put it this way. That is more water in 10 days than the entire state of Texas has gotten in the last 2 years. And it's also hitting Louisiana, that just 10 months ago had the worst storm in the country's history in Louisiana. In fact, in one parish, a parish is a county, they had 63,000 homes damaged or destroyed and didn't have flood insurance because it hadn't flooded. So they had once in a 500-year, you know, storm. Now they're having a second within the same year. This is the new norm. A sandstorm so tall that any small plane flying through it, the engines would have been destroyed and the plane would have crashed over Phoenix in the last month. Some of the hottest days recorded since humans have been on Earth around the world in the last 2 weeks. The soil is drying out, so crops that historically had been plentiful and easy to grow are now being challenged, and it's going to get worse. Tomorrow, I am finishing up with our scholars in residence a major white paper. We've been working on it for 4 years, and we will publish it online, and we will publish it as a series over the next 6 months because it's just too massive. It'll overwhelm people if you publish all at once. So we're publishing it piece by piece. The Guy McPhersons, the Kevin Hesters, the people who said, time is running out, they were correct. Now, what if that same Category 4 that hit the banks there, what if that had hit New York City? Could you imagine this city be brought to a standstill? Remember, Sandy was Category 1. And this is Category 4. We're going to have more categories at higher temperatures, higher amounts of raindrop than ever before coming at us, higher typhoons, etc. Now, here's some of the things you haven't been told and you should be. All up and down the coast of the United States, millions, if not hundreds of millions of trees are dying or are susceptible because salt water is coming in and flooding in the surges at night is flooding into the aquifers and to the root systems. And when it floods into the root systems, trees die. These are called ghost forests of dead and dying trees. Quote, this is from Yale Environment, from Yale University. Quote, the loss of these islands, these are the little barrier islands, changed the landscape from a mosaic to one dominated by a single habitat, salt marsh. And noting that the common means reduced habitat for some species of wading and migrating birds, as well as turtles and snakes, but it's also getting into the floodplains and it's getting into the trees. So we're destroying our trees because we've overdeveloped our shoreline. There's no longer barrier islands that could absorb that. So our desire to be on the ocean and to exploit that, karma's coming back. This is from Greenland. The largest wildfire ever recorded in Greenland is spotted close to the west coast town, not far from Disko Island, where, quote, I research retreating glaciers. The fire has captured public and scientific interest, not just because its size and location came as a surprise, but also because it is yet another signpoint of deep environmental change in the Arctic. And then it goes on to talk about how the ice sheets on Greenland are melting, but they're melting and allowing permafrost to thaw, and then all kinds of species are changing, and it's releasing all kinds of bacteria and viruses that have been dormant for thousands, if not millions of years, and it's doing faster than anyone ever anticipated. This is from Dartmouth College. Severity of North Pacific storms at highest point in over 1,200 years. And then it goes on to talk about these storms that we're seeing now, they're going to be worse than any we've ever seen in history, and it's going to get worse. And then they're dumping 770,000 tons of radioactive water. Well, first, that's going to pollute the water because most of this radiation, these isotopes, will not biodegrade down. That means the fish will consume them. The tuna will consume them. The larger fish, like swordfish, will consume more. The algae will consume them. Virtually nothing out of the Pacific Ocean should anyone be eating at this point. And it's going to get a lot worse because they're just going to keep dumping and dumping and dumping. Did everyone forget that even though the Fukushima was 6 years ago in the news, it's still happening. It's still secreting every 24 hours more and more. It just tells us we have forgotten the idea that when something's out of the news cycle, that it's any longer relevant. So what can we do? On an upcoming program, I'm going to revisit what we can do, the places to live. For example, I'll just give you a little tease on this. The greenest states at present in the United States, Vermont, Washington State, Massachusetts, Oregon, Minnesota, Maine, Connecticut, New York, New Hampshire, New Jersey, Maryland, and California, Northern California. Now, those are the greenest. So people say, yeah, let me go to a green state. No, you better understand that some of those green states are also running out of water. And they're also rich in hydrofracking and gas exploration. And therefore, you wouldn't want to be in those states. Okay. And what about the pollution in the water? Well, quote from EchoWatch, 2 billion people drink contaminated water. How many of those people are in the United States? About 70 million. So what do you do if you have contaminated water? How would you know your water's contaminated? For example, today I had water from my home. I live on a ranch. I live in the city when I'm in the city. I live in a ranch when I'm not. I had it sent to an outside independent lab just to check it. I have my own wells. I have my own solar system. I have my own backup generators. I have everything redundant. But still, you cannot take anything for granted because if any other industry or if anyone else spilled anything and it gets into your aquifer, then the whole aquifer is polluted. So I'll tell you what to look for, the best places to live, how to get there, where you shouldn't be going that will not be sustainable for the future, even if it was in the past. And then, most importantly, where the most progressive community is at. There are certain places, I promise you, you don't want to be if there are people around you who don't share your common values. So that'll be an upcoming special Progressive Commentary Hour I'll be doing in the next 3 to 4 weeks. Now, I'm going to play a piece in a few moments here about vaccines. I'll hold for tomorrow the white helmets. I just want to mention that tomorrow evening at 7 p.m., I'll have my progressive commentary on, but I'll also have on at the same time, separate, I'm going to be doing a webinar, a very important webinar, which is a premiere for the rest of the world that was not able to attend the sold-out showing of Plant Codes, which was a very successful fundraiser for the station WBAI. So anyone who wants to watch it, I'll be doing an hour and a half to two-hour commentary on what a plant-based diet can do to reverse disease afterwards. So I'll be able to take your calls. Just go to GaryNoll.com or PRN.FM, and you can, if you want to be a part of that, that's tomorrow night, 7. And now to a special commentary, and this is from 21st Century Wire, Vanessa Beely, B-E-E-L-E-Y, and she is an award-winning independent journalist. And here's what she says about the White Helmets. The article is entitled, "The White Helmets Campaign for War, Not Peace. RLA and Nobel Peace Prize Nominations Should Be Retracted." Quote, The awakened world is still reeling in shock from the Right Livelihood Award being given to the United States NATO state construct, the White Helmets. The White Helmets have been proven to be no more than a support network for al-Nusra Front and associated extremist terrorist groups. In many documented instances, the White Helmets are more than a support group and have been accused of carrying out criminal acts alongside the recognized U.S. coalition armed and funded terrorist factions. Ultimately, the White Helmets contravene all international laws regulating the behavior of a proclaimed humanitarian NGO. In the following statement that will be presented to the board of the Right Livelihood Award, I lay out very clear evidence to support my argument that the Right Livelihood Awards should be retracted and that the White Helmets Nobel Peace Prize nomination is a travesty of what this prize should represent. The statement requesting the retraction of the Right Livelihood Award given to the White Helmets. My name is Vanessa Beely. I'm an independent investigative journalist, writer, and photographer based in France. I contribute regularly to various independent media sites such as 21st Century Wire, the Ron Paul Institute, Global Research, Mint Press. I have recently returned from a four-week stay in Syria, from June 24th to August 26th. The first week I went as a member of the U.S. Peace Council delegation. In the subsequent 3 weeks, I traveled independently, as many governments allow you to do, and also I visited Aleppo in order to continue my own investigation into the organization known as the White Helmets. My conclusion, after my 18-month long analysis and research into this organization, is they are a U.S. and U.K. foreign office construct funded and equipped by nations that have a proven Western vested interest in their stated policy of regime change in Syria and a clear geopolitical agenda in the region. The White Helmets claim to be neutral and non-aligned, yet they actively promote and lobby for the U.S.-NATO state intervention, including a no-fly zone, which violates Syrian sovereignty. The majority of legal scholars agree that enforcing a no-fly zone is construed as an act of war. This is in direct violation of the fundamental principles upon which the authentic humanitarian work and certainly not deserving of the Right Livelihood Award. I respectfully request that the members of the Right Livelihood Award Committee review their award of this prestigious award to the organization known as the White Helmets. I believe strongly that this award has been given in error, perhaps because not enough evidence was presented to the committee. I ask the committee to consider the following documented and supported evidence. The White Helmets claim to be neutral, impartial, humanitarian NGO with no official affiliation to any political or military actor, and a commitment to render services to any in need regardless of sect or political affiliation. I will now present evidence that should demonstrate the illegitimacy of these claims. 1. The White Helmets receive funding from the United Kingdom, $65 million from their foreign office. In the United States, the U.S. State Department funded $23 million, Holland $4.5 million, Germany $7.8 million, Japan an undisclosed amount. Also, they have received multiple awards from different foundations, and it was set up by a British ex-military trainer of the White Helmets in order to transfer funding to the White Helmets. The White Helmets also receive equipment and supplies from various European Union member states. This funding is concealed behind the generic heading of emergency health and related support to the population affected by the crisis in Syria through the Directorate General of European Civil Protection Humanitarian Aid, formerly known as European Community Humanitarian Aid Office. 2. The White Helmets were established in Turkey, not in Syria. They are largely trained in Turkey and Jordan, not inside Syria. 3. The White Helmets are embedded exclusively in areas of Syria occupied by listed terrorist organizations, including al-Nusra and ISIS, along with various associated so-called moderate rebels, such as the al-Sham. All these groups are responsible for carrying out ethnic cleansing operations and mass executions of the Syrian people. In fact, it was the same group, Nur al-Din Zinki, which recently videoed beheading a 12-year-old Palestinian child. And like the White Helmets, all these terrorist factions receive funding, training, equipment, and support from the United States and its consolation partners, a fact that is extensively documented. 4, during the situation in Syria, in one community, in January 2016, the White Helmets were photographed attending demonstrations and carrying banners that were calling for the burning and destruction of the towns of Kafira and Foa. These are two villages under full siege by al-Nusra and al-Sham and al-Qaeda in Syria. And since March, partial siege. The siege ensures the starvation of villagers and daily shelling and sniping by these terrorist groups, with over 1,750 civilians killed during this time. There is video and photographic evidence available that clearly shows the White Helmets participating in al-Nusra Front operations in the areas occupied or taken over by this organization. There is one particular damning video taken during the Nusra Front violent and brutal attack on the one city in Syria. In this video, White Helmet operatives are seen clearly beating a Syrian civilian prisoner of al-Nusra Front and circling the prisoner, mingling with heavily armed and hostile Nusra militia. The White Helmets have been filmed cleaning up and clearing up after al-Nusra executions of civilian prisoners in northern Aleppo. Now, although the official statement from the White Helmets claims they arrived after the execution, the speed with which they appear in video immediately after the prisoner has been shot in the head demonstrates clearly that they were on the scene and did nothing to prevent it. Various White Helmet operatives have posted videos of the torture and execution of Syrian Arab Army prisoners to their social media pages with celebrating comments. One such operative is alleged to have been sacked for his participation in such executions. However, despite various demands, an official statement has never been issued by the White Helmets to this effect. Neither have they publicly condemned the torture and execution of prisoners of war, an act that contravenes the Geneva Convention. The leader of the White Helmets was deported from Dulles Airport in April 2016, no real explanation was ever given for this decision. The White Helmets are also referred to as the Syrian Civilian Defense. However, there is an existing Syrian Civil Defense. The real Syrian Civil Defense was established in Syria in 1953. I met with crews in Aleppo and other cities in Damascus during my 4 weeks in Syria. The real Syrian civil defense were founding members of the International Civil Defense Organization, which is affiliated with the UN and the World Health Organization, the Red Cross and the Red Crescent. The real Syrian civil defense are still paying annual subscriptions, and these are not the real Syrian defense. On multiple occasions, the White Helmets have been exposed staging rescue scenes for both photo and video, recycling images of children and incidents from the conflict in Syria to support their narrative, editing video which misrepresents the scene in question using images from previous incidents or even faking images altogether. There are many documented instances. The White Helmets have been filmed describing Syrian army bodies as trash, and one particular video shows them standing on top of a pile of dead Syrian soldiers' bodies whose boots have been removed or stolen. The White Helmets talk about the bodies in negative terms, and then they flick a victory V sign as a truck drives off. And while in Aleppo, I conducted a short video interview with a Dr. Bassem Hayek of the Aleppo Medical Association based in West Aleppo. The Dr. Hayek still has family trapped in East Aleppo. Dr. Hayek told me that his family and the majority of civilians in East Aleppo, occupied by Nusra Front and an estimated 22 brigades of armed militants, do not know who the White Helmets are, which begs the question, where are they conducting their much-promoted humanitarian work? Dr. Hayek also said that the UN agencies in East Aleppo who work with the Aleppo Medical Association are not aware of the White Helmets. In summary, this evidence points to the White Helmets being a U.S.-U.K. European Union-created established in 2013 and not an independent NGO. It is a multi-million dollar U.S. coalition-funded organization. It is funded in, by governments involved in invested in the Syrian conflict. No one can rightly call this a grassroots Syrian organization. So that's just some information that I believe the American public needs to know to show you that we have been misinformed, we have been lied to, and that these individuals do not deserve the Academy Award they got, nor these other awards for their so-called independent humanitarian work. I'll get to the other issues tomorrow. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more.